This feature of the Science News Radio Network is coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas. Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And yes, of course, it's so good to be with you again. We explore the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, and open innovation. I'm your host. I'm Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online webcast anytime at thepromiseoftomorrow.biz. And on the right-hand side of your screen at that website, you will see a link to the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference. It's going to go on coming up real quick, April 25th and 26th at the Westin Hotel in downtown Boston, or really Waltham, Massachusetts, which may as well be downtown Boston. This is the famous and historic International Conference on Homeland Security, where key technical gaps are closely examined. We sure hope that you'll attend with us. A lot of exciting things are happening. One is a presentation by Susan Gottslick. Got to get the pronunciation of the word right. She's with Raytheon, and Susan is a senior engineering fellow with the Integrated Communications Systems Business Area under Space and Airborne Systems. Her current research interests include mobile computing and cybersecurity, advanced communications, and seismic technologies. Instant communications from, like, the battlefield when a soldier may be down, but the information is so encrypted that if the cell phone or whatever it is found by an enemy, they won't be able to crack it and won't be able to find vital information that's on it. She says the idea of using machine learning didn't seem very feasible when she considered this, and so she has gone to a whole new process, and she's going to tell us about that in just a little bit, and when she speaks at the Homeland Security Technology Conference. And then in the second half of the program, Dr. James McDonald, he's the Dean of Graduate Programs for the Massachusetts Maritime Academy in Buzzard Bay, Massachusetts. He is a fascinating study. Dr. McDonald is. He tells about a little bit of the history of the Academy, but why it is so important to actually have in-classroom learning and not necessarily online, because you've got the benefit of all the other people that are there, and you'll know them as you go on in networking. And we'll visit the Den of Strangers, get wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of, visit our Fountain of Useless Information we have here in the set in the second half, and of course, the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, to our guest. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, we're going to go to the phones now, and we have Susan Gottslick. I've got to get this right. She's with Raytheon. She's currently a senior engineering fellow with the Integrated Communication Systems Business under Space and Airborne Systems at Raytheon. Fascinating person. She's going to be making a presentation at the IEEE Homeland Security Technology Conference that's going on April 25th and 26th in Boston. If you want to know more about the conference, you can go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link, and that'll tell you all about the conference. But right now, we have Susan. Welcome to the program, Susan.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you're going to be making a presentation, and we're real interested to find out a little bit more about it, to get kind of a preview. So if you tell us, you know, exactly how you've entitled this, and then give us kind of an overview of what are some of the things you're going to be presenting.
So, Colonel, years ago I was working on a research project with ONR where it was a knowledge management project that was able to put the right information on a cell phone at the right time for a Marine. And we showed this to various colonels and captains and majors in the Marine Corps, and they all liked the idea, but they were nervous about protecting the information on that cell phone. The problem is that a Marine could be killed or captured, and that cell phone could fall in enemy hands. So when I was looking at this problem a few years ago, I couldn't really find a good solution that gave the Marine easy access to the phone when he needed it, but wouldn't allow an enemy to get access to it if something unfortunate happened to that Marine.
Mm-hmm.
But with the advent of technology, nowadays we're seeing these fitness trackers, and I had this hypothesis that maybe we could use this fitness tracker to determine if the Marine was in a healthy state or in a duress state, or unfortunately maybe a killed state, and use the fitness tracker as a secondary authentication mechanism, a continuous authentication mechanism, so the Marine would have access to his cell phone without it locking him out, as long as the secondary factor, the fitness tracker, was able to say, hey, this guy's still in good shape and he's still in control of his phone. So that was the genesis of the idea.
Well, Susan, I'm going to ask every dumb question in the world, because everybody who listens to this program is smarter than me, and everybody who guests on the program is smarter than me, so I just have to get down to basics. And let's talk about the fitness tracker first of all. This is a mechanism that is attached, I understand, to the soldier, to the Marine, or to whomever happens to be wearing it. And it sends a signal, what, to the cloud, which indicates whether that person is fit or disabled or that sort of thing. Can you give us an in-depth picture of what this fitness tracker, how it works and what it is?
Well, there's many fitness trackers commercially available right now, and many of them look like bands, like wristbands or like watches. One of our constraints is we wanted this to work in an area where there may not be a connection to the cloud. So we're using the Bluetooth connection available on most fitness trackers, and it attaches directly into the cell phone. So we've written an algorithm that runs on the cell phone and is able to query that fitness tracker several times a second to get various biometric readings from the fitness tracker, and it uses it in the algorithm to determine normal state, duress state, or other states that could tell us maybe the Marine isn't ready or maybe the wearer isn't ready to really in control of his device.
So the fitness tracker then sends a signal through the cell phone communication and lets you know that it is indeed the right person that is making that communication and the right person that is operating that cell phone at that particular time. Is that right?
Absolutely. That's exactly the idea. And I should stress, the algorithm doesn't need a connection to the cloud, but certainly it's collecting a lot of information that could be valuable if there was a connection to the cloud. And, you know, this all gets back into ConOps and how this device might eventually be used in practice.
Okay, so let's say that this particular Marine is captured and is being held, and the enemy knows that that fitness tracker it works. They've figured out how all that happens. What's to prevent them from forcing that Marine to play like he's not captured, he or she, and then cooperate with the captors to work the cell phone and the signal? Do you have some fail-safe mechanism in place there?
Well, that's a very good question. Really what the algorithm right now is detecting is a sudden change in biometrics that would indicate a duress situation. So one would think in most situations if a Marine or a first responder were captured, that duress would happen before, you know, the captors had much ability to do anything to the Marine or to the captor. captive. So the idea is that it would, once it's triggered duress, it would take some sort of process to get it out of duress. Now, it's possible that the captor may recognize that maybe they can pressure the Marine into executing that process. But it's all up to the CONOPS and how the organization controlling these devices really want to handle that situation. Maybe what they want to do is provide, recognize that as a likely tamper and make that information unavailable, or make the provide misinformation to the user. So that's a little beyond the scope of what we're looking at, but we believe that this capability could be used in a broad range of ways to let the organization decide how they want to use their technology.
I could imagine duress, though, could come under many different ways. I mean, here's a Marine perfectly in control of himself and his weapons and whatever else his duty happens to require of him at that particular time, guarding the bunker or whatever, but be coming under heavy fire or coming under a lot of duress. How could that be differentiated from, let's say, being surprised all of a sudden and surrounded by people and taken captive?
So, duress is, from a biometric standpoint, it's the fear or flight mechanism that's kicking in. So basically what your body does is it prepares to either stay in fight or to run, okay? So taking heavy fire, being captured, all of these may well trigger that duress mechanism if the Marine is honestly feeling the fear of flight instinct. Now, for a well-trained Marine who's done a lot of exercises with firefighting or whatnot, his training may keep him from triggering that duress mechanism, in which case we hope that the training also helps him, helps him. For instance, in a firefight, you would expect that it wouldn't be a duress situation necessarily. It may be something that he's very well trained to take care of, and it's just part of perhaps a bad day for him.
Yeah. All right. Well, do you believe then that you have this whole mechanism, scenario, procedure? Do you have it all perfected? Is it ready to be launched, or is it already in operation?
It's still at a low TRL level, technology readiness level, and we really feel we need to find partnership. To be able to experiment further. What I have managed to do in the lab is to simulate duress based on a lot of work I've reviewed on what duress would look like on a human body, but I haven't had an effective way of creating a real duress situation to test it further. I honestly think that best way to move forward with this technology is to get it involved in some sort of a military or a homeland security type set of exercises where there are safe and reliable ways of creating duress situation and further evolving and experimenting with the technology that way.
Okay, so is there is one of the armed services receptive to this, and are you moving forward in that direction? Where are we in the stage of this?
So we're still looking around for partnerships, and we've been sending white papers out. So far, it's still pretty early days.
Okay, Susan.
fascinating stuff. And what do you hope will be the takeaway? What is it that that you're going to want the your listeners at the Homeland Security Technologies conference to be impressed with? If you can kind of sum it up in maybe a few words, things we have to look forward to, and what we can use as a takeaway of this.
Well, I think what I presented is a novel way of doing continuous secondary factor authentication, and that this authentication mechanism not only gives you the enhanced cybersecurity that you're looking for, but it's potentially a part of a bigger solution where commanders and troops get a better situation awareness. Perhaps we can use some of the output features on the fitness tracker to provide feedback, real-time feedback, that's not disrupting to the wearer. So it's not only, I believe, a good approach for continuous authentication, but I think it's part of a broader solution.
Okay. Let's explore that broader solution a little bit. Maybe look down the road 5 or 10 years or so. What do you see the future bringing to us? Do you have a kind of a peak of what is to come, even maybe 3 years or less? So what do you see?
So I think, you know, people are talking about, right now we think of using a cell phone as the magic device, and people are talking about 3-5 years down the road, maybe you don't need that cell phone. Maybe you have a military radio that gets authenticated against a fitness tracker, and there's a core in that military radio or some other tactical military or homeland security device that a Marine or a first responder is carrying, and he's able to get, he or she's able to get the same sort of information, maybe not just through the van, but and you know, there's all kinds of wearable devices out there now that do speech recognition, that talk to you and so forth. So I maybe long term in these first responder and military scenarios where working with a phone is not necessarily the really convenient way of doing things, we bypass that phone altogether but provide some of the same type assistant-like features to a wearer, using the band as just part of the overall solution.
Yeah, communications, of course, has always been vital in warfare and in defense and security and everything else, and we keep improving communications, or we seem to be. So this seems like it's going to be another step in that direction. What is an important point that you might want to get across that I have forgotten to ask you about? What have I missed?
So one thing you may have missed is that when I first started kicking around the idea of using a fitness tracker with some of my colleagues, they had this notion that, hey, you should go out and look at machine learning and learn what a normal body looks like, and that way you'd be able to detect what an abnormal situation looked like. The deeper I dug into it, and particularly into the biometric literature, I learned that the normal state of a person, if you just look at heart rate, and these bands collect several different signals, but if you just look at heart rate changes from day to day. Today you may have a cold, you may have had 2 extra cups of coffee, you may have had a fight with your children before you left. For some reason you may be spun up or, you know, a little bit down because you're running a fever. So from day to day, normal really changes, and that's perfectly normal in a human being. So the idea of using machine learning just as a straightforward normal detection mechanism, it didn't seem very feasible. What I decided to look at instead is what's known as a jump common filter, which will notice sudden changes, because what a common filter tries to do is try to predict you know, the next set of values coming out of a sensor.
Mm-hmm.
And when it sees a sudden difference, that's what's known as a jump. Now, I believe there's still potentially room for machine learning to try and determine, you know, the level of a jump that might trigger a duress signal, or the level of this or the level of that that would cause us to trigger different assessments of a wearer state. But the idea of just using machine learning as a brute force duress detection approach is just I don't think it will pan out easily.
So you're really a pioneer in this, you and Raytheon, and your work is continuing, and in summer you're still looking for partners who can help you move forward on this, and maybe some interest will be stirred at the Homeland Security Technology Conference, and that's a good reason to be there. So we'll sure look forward to seeing you at the conference. And I know that during the course of your career, you've been mentored by people that have inspired you, and I'm sure you're mentoring other people at this particular time. Do you have some words to live by? Maybe a creed a morality or something of living, something that you might pass on to a younger person, or maybe that was given to you, you know, in your earlier years in your studies.
Well, I think the most important thing about being a mentor or being mentored is that, you know, my experience as someone, a 20-something-year-old or a 30-something-year-old today, isn't going to have the same experience as I did coming up at that time, because we live in different times. So when I mentor people or when I'm mentored, I really look to get the advice, but to always put it in the context of the current situation. So when more senior engineers have suggested things to me, I haven't ignored the advice, but I've realized you can't follow it directly. And the same thing about, you know, more junior engineers. I don't think I can tell them exactly what to do because I'm not in their situation. So I always try and give them guidance and let them make the right decisions.
Well, I know what you're exactly what you're talking about with the age differences. I have a niece, college age niece, and right after the recent election, she says, "Okay," she says, "What do you think of Donald Trump?" And I said, "Well, I don't think we elected Benito Mussolini, but I think we might have elected Archie Bunker." And she gives me this blank look, and I said, "Oh, geez." I said, "You don't know who Benito Mussolini is." She said, "Oh, no." She said, "I know full well who Benito Mussolini was." She said, "But I never heard of Archie Bunker. Who is he?" That's when I started to feel really old. I thought everybody knew who Archie Bunker was. Okay, well, Susan Gottschalk, it's been wonderful having you with us. Thank you so much for taking time from your busy day and giving us a preview of what we can look forward to at the Homeland Security Technologies Conference. That's going to go on the 25th and 26th of April. And it's a famous and historic international conference on Homeland Security Technology Gaps, and you are showing how to fill one of them. And so we're really looking forward to seeing you and representing Raytheon at the conference. I want to mention to our listeners that if they're interested in more information about that conference, go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. On the right-hand side of your screen, you'll see a link, and that'll tell you all about it. Susan, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you again.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Science News Radio Network special presentation, Promise of Tomorrow, with Colonel Mason. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online anytime, webcast, at promiseoftomorrow.biz. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. Who in the Den of Strangers will we meet today?
Catherine Graham, sometimes the things you don't do are as important as the things you do.